Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 10th of November. In San Francisco, if you don't include some nutritious items in those Happy Meals, skip the toys. That's a decision that was made by the board there in San Francisco, but there are movements all over the country to get those who include toys in their Happy Meals or fast food meals to children to make sure that something healthy is offered, some carrots, some apples, instead of automatically offering French fries and very high-calorie, high-sugary meals. There also is more nutrition news, of course, these days, and some of it has to do with cheese, and we'll talk about cheese and fast food restaurants and advertising that is aimed at young people in this country. The number of ads that very young children see in the course of a day is so high, and if you're a little bit older, it's even higher than that. So how do we get healthy, and what is the role of these fast food restaurants? Why do we eat so much of that food? Do they need to be regulated, or is it something that we should just regulate ourselves, that parents and families need to regulate for themselves and quit going to those places, or at least don't go to them quite as often as we do? What is it, the recent study in the last week, that most families had taken their family to a fast food restaurant within the last 7 days. Our guest this hour is Professor Susan Nitschke, professor and extension specialist in nutritional sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and author of Rethinking Nutrition, Connecting Science and Practice in Early Childhood Settings. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if the email is something you would like to use, then use it. It's talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor Susan Nitschke, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So what have we offered Happy Meals? You know, you go to a fast food place, but, you know, you get carrots and you get apples and skip the French fries, and you still get, and then you get a toy. Would that entice many more of us to eat well?
Well, I think the principles behind what you're mentioning are very relevant to this discussion. I believe 93% of Happy Meals are sold with French fries and a sweetened beverage, like whatever they have at McDonald's, Coke or Pepsi. So the thought is that a more healthy meal could have a toy, but the typical Happy Meal at McDonald's or whatever fast food restaurant you're talking about, it's not just McDonald's in the San Francisco ordinance. You would think that in our nation, the healthiest foods we have available would be the foods that we promote to children.
Right.
Sort of, at least from
you
my
would.
Perspective as a nutritionist. But, you know, there's marketing and profits and expectations. So this is a very complicated issue, and I can't wait to spend a few minutes talking about it.
Yeah. Well, at least we have a whole hour, which is good.
Yeah.
It is amazing how woven in it is to the very fabric of American civilization. You go to a fast food restaurant. Almost well over half of American families have done that within the last 7 days. Kids love going to these restaurants. They really do. There are only a handful, I think, who don't go to these places. It's part of our nation.
It is, Kathleen, and that's such an important point. And I don't think even the San Francisco officials are trying to get people to stop going to fast food restaurants. But there are some principles involved that if the most prevalent choices at those restaurants amount to the very foods that are contributing to our obesity epidemic, mm-hmm. our hypertension rates, and, you know, exemplify what's wrong with the American diet, then do we think that's important enough to request, or in this case, require something to change?
Tell me how these places may be contributing to the astronomically high levels of obesity and obesity among children.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it was very well summarized in a report issued by a national panel of experts called the Advisory Group for the 2010 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. You might know that every 5 years, the U.S. government has to reissue the dietary guidelines, which are the basis of policy decisions for nutrition and food in this country. And so they convene a number of nutrition experts, and they really work over a year-long process to look at all of the evidence about what's good and bad about the American diet and set forth the principles that they think would be best to advise nutrition policy in this country. So things like, you know, reduce your intake of sugar-sweetened beverages are like one of the recommendations of the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee's report that came out just a few weeks ago. And the report mentions that all of these changes, you know, one by one, they're important, they can help. But what we really, really need is what they call a system-wide and systematic approach to narrowing the gap in between the way Americans eat and what would be a more healthful dietary pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So picking on any one particular food automatically is sort of trite and trivial. And picking on any one source of food, like whether it's McDonald's or the vending machines at school or what's in the deli counter at your restaurant, those are all little important pieces of a big, complicated puzzle. And if our country doesn't have the will and the sense of urgency to really look at what's needed from a comprehensive approach, then there'll be these sort of piecemeal activities that seem a little strange and odd, but you know, really have some important principles behind them.
Well, we seem to know what is needed, don't we? We know the obesity rate is way out of line in this country, that people are being diagnosed with diabetes at the age of 15 or 16, that people aren't exercising as they should, even though we know all of this. We know what foods are good for us. There might be some debate about vitamin taking or how much exactly you need, but we know this. So what's the problem here? Why aren't we acting on it?
Oh, you know, that's such an important question. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which probably leads a lot of these discussions about what's needed in this country, has really come around in the last few years to saying we've educated individuals with a few exceptions of misinformation in this country. People really understand how to eat more healthfully. They know they should be eating their fruits and vegetables, and they know that milk is a healthier beverage than soda pop. There might be some confusion about things like energy drinks and things like that, but the basic principles people get, and they're not doing. So what the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says, that doesn't mean that education isn't important. It means that education by itself is sort of destined to fail. If the environment, meaning the accessibility and affordability and availability of healthy, nutritious food choices, is all stacked against the consumer, mm-hmm. we shouldn't be amazed that they're not always making the best choices.
So what are a few things we can do to, as you subtitle your book, connect the science and the practice?
Well, what we should do, I think, brings in some of the principles that have been talked about in the previous shows on public radio this morning. I was really kind of struck by the principles of free speech in this country really come into play when you're talking about restricting marketing practices, which is what this Happy Meals program from San Francisco is really about. The things that we should do are to look at an effective package of interventions at the public policy level, at the organizational level. You know, what do employers provide as opportunities for their workers at the work site? What kind of foods and beverage choices? What's in the schools? In the case of my book, how are we feeding children in daycare and preschool environments? Even some people might not realize how important it is, but research shows it's even important to have children be breastfed from birth as a measure to help prevent obesity in this country. So there's lots of things, and they're all important, and if we try to focus on one and forget all the rest, it's not going to be as effective as it could be as part of a whole comprehensive package.
Mm-hmm. What about efforts? Are these just relatively meaningless? They're nice, but they don't do very much. We certainly have seen the First Lady take on this issue, and I'm impressed every time I see the garden and the young people who are working in the garden. If we did that, I would think in schools all over the country at very young ages, had people grow things. Young people love to see. I love to see that. You know, you grow something, and there it is, and then you get to eat it. It's just kind of miraculous, and you can grow good food. Are we doing enough of that, and does that make any kind of large difference to have that national stage?
Well, you might know that I'm part of a group called YPAN. It's the Wisconsin Partnership to Prevent Obesity, and the PAN stands for Physical Activity and Nutrition. So we're really promoting physical activity and nutrition. And one of our emphasis areas is to promote more familiarity with our food supply. Some people call it food literacy. Just having children and adults and families become more familiar with where did your food come from and how was it handled and before you purchased it and ate it. So as you mentioned, having a little garden patch, even if it's just growing your parsley and, in my case, rosemary and thyme in a window box, helps give you the sense of, you know, what's really involved in getting food to grow and handling it carefully. And I think it makes kids and everyone more aware of that food isn't just something that you just go get at a store, that there's a lot that happened before that. And some of what happened before that has really a lot of significance for the healthfulness of that food.
It's interesting you mentioned parsley because as I was getting into my car going through the backyard this morning, I looked at this huge amount of parsley that has grown. I've never planted it before, and it is, I don't know what to do with all this parsley, so please tell me.
Oh, wow, I have lots of parsley in my freezer. And I.
You do?
I couldn't live without it. It's so you just pick your parsley
okay. And
take the tops. You know, the stems are kind of not as much delicious.
Yeah.
And chop them up and put them in a Ziploc bag
okay. And
stick them in the freezer. And then every time you're cooking something that would benefit from some fresh parsley, you just break off the amount you need and put it in your soup or whatever you're making, and it tastes just about as fresh as the day you picked it. It's really easy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You made my day. That's great. Let's welcome phone calls. We'll take them in a moment. We're talking about young people in nutrition. Our takeoff point is the Board of Supervisors in California saying if you're selling Happy Meals in fast food restaurants, you can't have a toy in the meals unless you have something that's healthy as well, which is an interesting thing for them to do. But our guest is saying what we need to do is look at this as a system-wide approach to this problem, and it's a huge problem, as you well know, in the country. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And our guest is Professor Susan Nitschke, professor and extension specialist in nutrition sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She is the author of Rethinking Nutrition, Connecting Science and Practice in Early Childhood Settings. To your calls momentarily on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this hour, something entirely different. We will speak with the author of Frank the Voice. And that, of course, refers to Frank Sinatra. It's an exhaustive book, 800 pages. You know what I'll be doing tonight. And James Kaplan is going to be with us, the author of the book. He's a novelist and a nonfiction writer. And, you know, he was such an influential guy in the area of music. And his story is fascinating because of the associations with the mafia and all the women that he was involved with in his marriages, in his everything about him. He was an intriguing figure. You always learn something every day. I've learned several things today, parsley and how, you know, he was 13. I read this much, 13 and a half pounds at birth. A huge baby. Isn't that amazing? Although he was only 5 foot seven and a half and weighed about 110 pounds. So we'll learn things like that, but also listen to some of his absolutely gorgeous voice, natural voice, the phrasing of what he sang. So that will be a good hour tomorrow at 10. To your phone calls now. Naomi from Dubuque, Iowa is our first caller. Hi, Naomi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I actually just have a question and I guess kind of looking for some input. With the San Francisco ruling, I understand the idea of free market and that it's kind of a slippery slope with, you know, regulating what advertisers can say and do. And, you know, I understand all that and that adults have the freedom to choose, even with all this, like you said, even with all this education, people still make bad decisions a lot of the time. But I feel like with children, they don't have they don't know any better. And unless their parents are going to be responsible and make the right choices for them, I feel like as a society, we kind of have a responsibility to step in and make rulings like this or make decisions like this and regulate certain things for children that maybe we wouldn't regulate for adults because, like I said, it is a slippery slope. But with kids, unless they have that sort of safety net where somebody's looking out for them and forcing them to make good decisions with their diet, we're just setting them up for failure for
a
lifetime.
Interesting point.
Bad eating habits.
Susan, what do you think?
Oh, I totally agree. And that's one of the things that's happening in the national policy discussion. The Federal Trade Commission, the Food and Drug Administration, when they talk about the way that food is marketed to children, it's a little bit different dynamic than when you're talking about adults. There's somewhere around the age of maybe 8 where kids actually understand that advertising is trying to get them to do something that may or may not be in their best interest. And before that age, advertising really can be thought of as having sort of an unfair influence to children who really can't discern how to apply the message to their daily lives. And they just see kids having fun and jumping around with Ronald McDonald and eating Happy Meals and just what could be more glorious. And I don't think you'll find many children in this country who don't have sort of a that kind of reaction. And there's millions and millions of dollars behind that kind of marketing promotions that nutritious food products, not that there's nothing nutritious at McDonald's, but you know what I mean, fruits and vegetables and low-fat milk, for instance, just can't do that kind of marketing. So is that just the way we want it to be in this country, or should we have some regulations that when it comes to the idea of protecting children, go a little farther in restricting the free market principles than we would otherwise.
Thanks, Naomi, for your perceptive call. Suzanne in Oshkosh, hi.
Yeah, hi. I was calling with a comment. When we had, my son is 4, when he was born, we made some real changes in our diet. I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes, which continued on, and so we had to make some changes because of that. And now that when he was 3 and 4, we instituted a term, which is brain and body food. And we eliminated most processed food from the house. And we've just distinguished for him that some foods are brain and body food, and he really needs this to feed himself. And sometimes he gets to have treats. But for the most part, his focus should be on brain and body foods, which are fruits and vegetables. You know, whole foods. And that seems to be at least educating him in the right direction. So he's already making that distinction.
Professor Nitschke?
Yeah, well, I'm really happy to hear that Suzanne has been able to help her son really understand some very basic principles at the age of four. And I especially like that she mentioned the idea of treats. I don't think most nutrition experts are trying to say, you know, treats are always, always bad. But one of the things that national surveys show is that 35%, so over a third of the calories of the average American diet, is from solid fats and added sugars. These are the things that the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee report says we have to really minimize our intake of, because that's where our extra calories are coming from, and indeed what's making us, many of us, fatter than we should be. So if a third of our calories are coming from these foods that are just basically high sources of solid fats, which are the saturated fat, and added sugars, then something needs to change, and helping kids from the time that they understand language, as Suzanne seems to have done with her four-year-old, understand that, you know, treats have their place versus something that we have every day and every meal, I think is an excellent principle to instill early.
Thanks, Suzanne, very much for the call. And here is an email, Dave in Madison. Let parents, and then capital letters, who take their kids to McDonald's be responsible for what their children eat while there. This is no business of city or any other government.
Well, you know, you had a show earlier this morning, or one of the other public radio hosts had a show earlier this morning about blame. And the guest talked about how there's a difference between sort of accountability for your actions and sort of finding scapegoats and oversimplifying who's responsible for what. And I think this is an issue that really, really brings up this kind of principle. If we're going to say that the parents are responsible for their children's food choices and the advertisers can do whatever they want to make it harder for the parents to guide their children in that direction, then I guess we're going to get what I'm afraid of, which is continually accelerating rates of obesity, because, you know, when it's kind of an uphill battle when kids learn that high-fat, high-sugar foods, whether it's at McDonald's or the grocery store or the vending machines, if it's all the parents' fault, that's really a big burden, and we're just making it harder for parents to guide their kids in the right direction. If that's how Dave and Madison wants it to be, then that's certainly how he should kind of promote public policy. I happen to have a more, what I view as a more balanced approach to try to preserve as much as we can the rights of kind of company policies and free speech, but when it comes to marketing to children, that there have to be some special protections.
Kenneth in Milton, hi.
Hello. What we're talking about is the politics of food, however, because you talk about balance. It all depends on where the balance is at, and the laws will become more and more to control our lives. We're on the slippery slope, but the slope is not very fast. They just kind of accept, you know, the control of our lives from the government, and from the food to different aspects of our lives as we get used of the government being able to do that.
Professor Nitschke.
Yeah, you know, this is a very basic struggle of democracies, in my opinion, and I've lived through several kind of swings of the pendulum about how much government control is too much government control. And, you know, I just think it's such an important principle. But to view
improve food labeling or to require menus to tell how much fat and calories are in the foods that we order and things like that. If those are viewed as slippery slopes that we can't afford to tolerate, then I think maybe we'll have to disagree about where the dividing line is between too much government control and enough government policy to give all the companies kind of an even playing field so that nutritious food choices aren't the hardest to make.
Thanks for your call, Kenneth. Can we talk a little bit more about advertising? What has happened? I know there have been some regulations placed on advertising of foods that are harmful to children on the networks that they watch and on programs that are aimed directly at children. Have those been sufficient, and are they effective?
The Federal Trade Commission has been working on policy provisions and proposed legislation and that sort of thing for a long time. And depending on which administration is in charge of the White House and that sort of thing, the strength of those regulations kind of gets stronger and then gets pulled back. And I think right now we're at a time where the regulations aren't very strong. And advertising to children, what are the principles behind how these decisions should be made? It's just very complicated. And I think it's exemplified by a term that you used, and you said food that's harmful for children. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why this is such a difficult topic. It, in and of itself, there are very few foods that are always, always harmful. You know, that would be poisonous things.
Mm-hmm.
So the dietary guidelines that I mentioned a little while ago stress the need to minimize our intake of solid fats and added sugars, and as a side, also foods that are high in salt and sodium. And in small amounts, there's nothing wrong with those foods. It's just when those foods become the dominant ingredients in our most typical food choices, then it throws the total diet out of balance. And that's why the American Dietetic Association and many national nutrition expert groups recommend that we stop trying to point the finger at this is a good food, this is a bad food, because it's really not a productive concept. What we need to look at is, what is your total diet like? If it's out of balance, what are the things that are throwing it out of balance, and then what can we do about that? And for many Americans, it's too much sweetened, too many choices, and too large of a portion when it comes to things like sweetened beverages. There's a food category called refined grains, meaning kind of those snacky desserts and donut kind of choices.
Right.
That's also very high on the list of things that Americans in general eat too much of. But for you or me, it might be ice cream, or it might be pizza.
Chocolate cake.
Yeah, or coffee cake, whatever mm-hmm. it is. So, you know, everyone needs to kind of look at what's throwing their personal diet out of balance, if that's the case. And then also, as the policymakers and the people who provide the food that we eat and who market the food that we eat should also examine those principles and see what they can do to help to bring that more in line.
That's a much better way of looking at all of it, isn't it? It's not punitive. It's let's look at your total diet and bring it in balance. I like that.
Well, good.
Yeah. Let's go to Nicholas in Hixton. Hi, Nicholas.
Good morning. I would like to make a comment as a physician, especially to to Dave and Madison and the individuals who are worried about a slippery slope. The problem how somebody bringing your child to McDonald's can affect me is that 35 years from after these umpteen McDonald's meals, there's going to be my daughter needing a kidney from renal nephropathy, maybe idiopathic, meaning had nothing to do with anything she did in life, and your daughter needs a kidney from good old diabetic nephropathy. And the problem is going to be my child's going to be 57, your child's going to be 42. Your child's going to get the kidney, not my child. So I just want to make it very clear. There are definite connections that what people do affect other people, especially when we talk about the limited health care resources in the long run with all this.
That's pretty dramatic. Susan?
Well, there's more principles that come to play in this complicated nutrition field that that I love and work in every day. Nicholas mentions that health care, the burden of health care from treating people with diabetes and other obesity-related diseases is tremendous. It's in the, if I recall correctly, hundreds of billions of dollars, and that those are conservative estimates. And the number one cause of diabetes, the most prevalent form, is type 2 diabetes, which is associated with overweight. And overweight comes from consuming too many calories, and many of us get too many calories from the kinds of foods that are represented by Happy Meals. So, yeah, there is a connection. It's not immediate and direct, but it's still important.
Thanks so much for the call. Here's another email. Several of them have been coming in. What about high fructose corn syrup? Tom in Wausau asks, it's in everything now. What do you think about it? And what about the growth hormones and antibiotic in meat supplies?
Well, I'm not sure about what about those is relevant to the discussion today, but let me make a few comments. One of the, I mentioned earlier that we don't really need a lot of nutrition education in this country to help us understand the basic principles of making good food choices. But I think there is a lot of public confusion about high fructose corn syrup and whether it's worse for you than other forms of added sugar.
Mm-hmm.
The Dietary Guidelines for Americans report has a chapter on carbohydrates, and it basically says, if there are differences, they're very nuanced and very insignificant compared to the overall fact that they're both sources of similar sweetness and similar extra calories that they bring to our food. And if you think that Coke or Pepsi or Mountain Dew is better for you because it's made with sugar than high fructose corn syrup, you're wasting your time. That's not the problem. The problem is that added sugars in all of their forms, and the most prevalent form right now because it's so cheap and readily available is high fructose corn syrup. But changing from high fructose corn syrup to some other form of added sugar isn't going to fix things. The growth hormones and antibiotics, those are those have to do with production practices, basically with animal foods. And there are protections. The U.S. Department of Agriculture does only allows their use under very strict conditions. So I think a lot of popular press overemphasizes that if you eat food from the regular grocery store, you're going to get all these growth hormones and antibiotics. I think many people who are concerned with those topics have been reading or viewing or listening to misinformation. That doesn't mean that they're totally unimportant issues, but I don't think they have much to do with the prevalence of obesity in this country, if that was the caller's intent.
Right. Amy in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. I had a couple of comments. I was glad that the doctor called in. One of my concerns, too, with just letting people eat whatever they want is that it is driving up the cost of health care, and it's driving up my insurance premiums. I'm paying for a lot of the obesity in the nation, and I think we do need to be accountable to one another. But with that aside, I was a teacher, and some of the children in my classroom came from poverty, and they would come to school with chips or with some kind of lunch meat that was really highly processed on white bread. And I would try to help the kids understand that if they went to the grocery store and bought a bag of apples, that would cost about $3, and then they could eat an apple every day for 8 days or 10 days, you know, just to try to help them understand that even though it seems like a bag of apples is a lot of money, you can eat that over time. But the reality is, you know, white bread is cheaper than wheat bread, and cheese seems to be expensive. And so when you're looking at trying to feed a family and going to a store and buying all whole foods and fruits and vegetables that may spoil before you eat them, I think that's a dilemma for people.
I think you're right. Susan.
Yes, Amy, I think the observation that you learned that the children in poverty in your classes were often the children who were having a lot of processed foods and what they brought from home really brings up a principle that is a huge concern in our country right now, and it has to do with health disparities. I don't know if you've heard the term food deserts, but it's being very common in the kind of social and economic study of our food supply. Inner city neighborhoods and neighborhoods characterized by poverty often are areas that are not well served by grocery stores where the kind of fruits and vegetables and foods that we're trying to promote people to eat more of are readily available. And to go back to the original point of discussion, the restaurants are extremely dominated by the most fast food of all fast food choices, so that in those neighborhoods, if you really made a concerted effort that you're going to stop buying chips and buy more apples, it's really quite difficult to find them, and they're more expensive in those neighborhoods, and it kind of feels like the cards are stacked against those food choices. There are behavioral economists who are publishing studies, it seems like on a weekly basis, kind of documenting this problem and making suggestions for how to make it better. And that, again, brings in these marketing, free market, the tension between the people who want to let the people who produce and sell food do whatever they need to do to make a profit versus making it easier for Americans to make the right food choices. It's a dilemma.
Yeah, it is a dilemma. Thanks so much for the call. We'll take more phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Susan Nitschke. She's a professor and extension specialist in nutritional sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's co-author of Rethinking Nutrition, Connecting Science and Practice in Early Childhood Settings. And our conversation prompted by that ruling by the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco saying that you can't put the toy in the Happy Meal unless you put the apples or the carrots or something nutritionally valuable in the Happy Meal. And we're going beyond that, of course, in our conversation. So we have no lines open, but keep the number in mind, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This sounds like an interesting idea for a future show, and maybe you know more about this, Susan. This email has come in. My children had the great good fortune, this is from Dawn, to have a real food curriculum taught to them in high school. They all know how to cook and what to cook to stay healthy. It would make a great show, which indeed it would. Real food, integrated food and nutrition curriculum. Are you familiar with that?
Well, I don't know about this specific curriculum, but one of the things that this YPAN group that I'm part of, a statewide coalition, has been working with is to put out the standards for nutrition education with recommendations about what concepts should be covered at every grade level so that, you know, the kids don't learn over and over every year what food group beans are in and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really quite proud of that. It was rolled out a year or two ago, and we make lots of recommendations for teaching materials that can be used. Unfortunately, the kind of No Child Left Behind and other, math and science and reading tests that the kids take don't often cover these nutrition principles. So it takes a really pretty dedicated school system to find ways to make this work. And, of course, being a nutrition expert and a nutrition educator, I think it should be done, and I think there are ways to do it. But whether schools tackle that challenge and teach nutrition every year, starting with what I think is important, starting with preschoolers. It just doesn't happen automatically. And I'm old enough to remember high school home ec classes.
So am I.
And those have, they've kind of morphed over the years, but I think there's a new awareness of the need to teach what are called life skills in school, age-appropriate life skills, whether it's how to balance, well, in my day it was how to balance a checkbook, and nowadays it's how to balance your bank account online, to understanding what kind of taxes you have to pay and how to pay them, you know, this sort of financial literacy. And in my case, I'm advocating for food literacy as part of that kind of teaching. And whether it happens in the health class or some kind of family and consumer education class or math class, in my case, the important thing is that it happen.
Yes. Oh, I agree. Just want to tell for a future program note, if you may want to mark this on your calendar if you're interested in this specific area, Lori David will be joining us next Thursday at 10 o'clock, and she has a book, The Family Dinner, Great Ways to Connect with Your Kids One Meal at a Time, and they are good meals, and so we'll be talking about that next week. And we'll look at this whole plate, too. We'll go to that website. All right, more phone calls. The next caller is Craig from Appleton. Hi, Craig.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, how are you?
Good.
Good.
I just had a comment that kind of ties together. You've got people calling that are proponents of personal freedom and people calling that are talking about the effects that these choices people have make on the rest of us. And the thing that's missing from the discussion, that's missing from most discussions we have about every issue, is personal responsibility. It's not, you know, everybody wants to say McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Hostess made me fat and unhealthy. No, they didn't. You did it yourself. I'm a huge proponent of personal freedom strongly tied to personal responsibility. And as a society, our government should be focusing not on taking away people's personal freedoms, but demanding and assuring that they take personal responsibility for the results of those actions.
And what about when it comes to children? Do we as a society need to make sure that our children are given the best, and we need to have a look at corporations who are marketing to children and perhaps giving them foods, et cetera, that are going to result in health care problems down the line?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with making some policies that deal with what types and how you can advertise. But it's the idea of just, you know, taking the choice away completely that is a bad thing.
Susan?
Well, yeah, and I think Craig makes an important point here. I think there have been several callers who are concerned about if we allow this kind of making requirements for what has to be in a meal that's given to children, if you're going to put a toy in it. As I think we've been discussing over the course of the hour, there are really bigger principles involved here. And the idea of balancing our personal freedoms versus the kinds of activities that need to make healthier choices accessible to children or anyone, that's not an easy balance that everyone can agree on. And I think we all agree that the government needs to do certain things. You know, there need to be stop signs and there need to be protections for our safety to just help us live our daily lives. But at what point it becomes an infringement on our personal freedoms, I think the last elections and the rhetoric around the last elections show that that's really a principle that we care a lot about. And I'm glad everyone feels strongly, because that's needed in a democracy. If everybody just didn't care, then we'd really be in a pickle.
Yeah. You know, we also, though, do special things for children. People put those signs on their car, baby on board. We make child carrier seats. So you got to use those if you have young babies. People need to be protected if they're toddlers in the way they sit in cars. Children are, in many senses of the word, a special breed.
Absolutely. And I as I mentioned, especially I think children under the age of 8, foods that are marketed to children of that age, whether it's by putting a toy in with what they eat or what they see, you know, what they see as commercials on TV these days is just a minor aspect of marketing. There are all kinds of embedded and paid for food messages in the programs themselves, in the types of video games that they're offered on websites for different companies. The complexity of food marketing these days, especially marketing to kids, makes it extremely difficult to regulate and even understand, because companies don't always have to file reports saying, here's what we're doing to get Johnny to want to buy our donuts. And so how far we go in trying to take control of this issue and tip the forces such that kids can make the healthy choices, and they're taught that making the healthy choices is part of the fun thing to do or the cool thing to do or whatever marketing principle is motivating the kids. That's really tricky, and hopefully something that our government is up to.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Craig. Patricia in Portage.
Yeah, I think that there's enough accountability to go around. You know, there's a wider subject, too, is animals are being, animal agriculture, according to the United Nations, is a major, major contributor, more than all transportation, to global warming. And global warming and species biodiversity loss are major, major threats. I mean, the United Nations has ratcheted it up and asked for creative and radical action to save diversity on this planet. So you can't have 100 million farm animals killed every hour, I mean, a million farm animals killed every hour in this country, and have diversity. And children love animals, so I think if parents were aware that the world is basically disappearing, the web of life is, you know, being destroyed, and that's happening in rainforests to serve the meat market in this country and here, and we've lost our prairies and our wetlands, and really the species that are bearing the brunt of this is the web of life that supports us. So I think children love animals. If they were taught that beef and pork and these things are animals that they love, they wouldn't be led down the same destructive patterns that are destroying the web of life that we need.
Susan.
Yeah, I think Patricia's comments show how complicated the dimensions of our food choices really are when we look at the political and personal and philosophical issues that are represented by how we choose to put different things on our plate or buy things at the grocery store or the restaurant or grow them in our garden or have chickens in our backyard or whatever our choices are. They really represent, I think, a view that needs to be well grounded in what the meaning of our food choices really is in all of our personal philosophies. And that's why I'm part of a group here on campus who's really putting forth an effort to have more of a coordinated series of classes that teach our students about food literacy, a concept that I brought up earlier. And our students are asking for these classes, and I hope we're going to be able to really put together a program that's going to help them be critical thinkers in these areas. It's really easy to kind of make these issues too simple.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. And, yeah. They are very complicated.
Aren't they, though? It's
amazing. Yeah, it is. And along the lines of literacy, I think Dawn may have an appropriate comment from Coon Valley. Hi, Dawn.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. I think that it is a complicated situation, our food system. I do think that we need to teach kids about food if we're ever going to get a handle on the obesity or the diabetes. I also think that one of the reasons I called to recommend the whole plate is that it is integrated. It uses academic-style readings from Michael Pollan, from Silent Spring. So it teaches about the whole food system. It teaches students that they have the power with where they choose to spend their food dollar to make a change, not only in their health, but in the health of their community and the health of the planet.
Oh, great, John. I didn't know you were the person on the line who had sent the email. We're on the case. We'll look at that. It's a good show.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not familiar with this particular one, but I'm a member of the Society for Nutrition Education.
Okay.
And one of our most effective leaders is Isabel Contento, and she is from Columbia University in New York. And she's been working for probably 10 years on putting together a curriculum.
Oh, marvelous. Okay.
Yeah.
Send it to us, would you?
The food supply.
We're out of time, but we'll be in touch with you. We'll get fashion a show. Thank you, Susan, so much. Thanks. Our guest this hour, Professor Susan Nitschke, professor and extension specialist in nutritional sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing on air, and to Rhonda Fanning for producing. Tomorrow, what about outsourcing jobs? We're going to look at that. And then Frank Sinatra this second hour of our program.